Birth, Volume 3, The Gathering, Chapter 7. "Sorry I'm late," said Riker, walking with Hadid into the kitchen in Building A. "Not that late. I'm glad you came," said Lorraine, standing up to shake his hand. Riker wrapped both his hands around the one of hers and held it for a moment, while Hadid slipped quietly behind the chef to accept a cup of coffee from him. He had been making coffee for the Secret Service for more than 30 years, and he was used to them sitting like houseplants around the kitchen while presidents ate midnight sandwiches and early morning muffins. Riker had gotten used to Lorraine probing him with whatever gift she seemed to have. She never said anything, but she seemed to be standing there when the ball came over the wall, ready to catch it. "I haven't had a moment to rest since we got here. I guess I underestimated the withdrawal of a nation hooked on federal money," said Riker. "Well, it took more than 80 years for lies to become truth," said Lorraine, gently sliding her hand from between his. "It's like water, I suppose. It keeps dripping. People keep wiping it up until they stop. The drip becomes a river and cuts through the land, making a canyon," said Riker. "Not a bad analogy. Maybe we can't do much about the canyon, but the river is about to be rerouted. Have you had one of Chef Bailey's creme brulees?" "No, not yet. You think it'll help?" asked Riker. "Save the world?" asked Lorraine. "Reroute the river," said Riker. "Well, I don't know about that, but my desserts have been known to change hearts," said Chef Bailey. "Just have a seat. Have some decaf. I want to share something with you," said Lorraine. Chef Bailey sparked the Bunsen burner and brushed its blue flame across the sugar on top of the creme brulee into a smooth brown crisp. With a snap, the flame disappeared, and the chef slid the still-smoking dessert in front of the president with a shiny silver spoon beside it. "Try that, Mr. President, and see if you would not rather have world peace," he said. Riker placed the thin spoon between his thumb and forefinger and crunched through the sweet crust. The sweetness was changed by the custard and vanilla bean on his tongue, and the rush of pleasure was undeniable. "Absolutely. World peace," said Riker, smiling. "How could anyone think of taking over the world when something tastes that good?" asked Lorraine. "Well, I have a full day tomorrow. The Joint Chiefs are coming back with a budget proposal for defending against a space-based attack. I still can't believe how science fiction has become reality," said Riker. "Some people say that the evil powers must preview their plans to the masses before they actually implement them. Some kind of galactic rule or something," said Lorraine. "You mean like Jules Verne writing about going to the moon?" asked Chef Bailey. "Like that, only for the dark side. Let me give you an example. Remember Clancy writing about using a plane as a missile against Washington?" asked Lorraine. "You mean executive orders?" asked Riker. "That's a perfect example," said Lorraine. "So, all of the writings by these ancient civilizations about a planetary division were real?" asked Riker. "We're watching it, aren't we?" said Lorraine. "So, what's the point? I mean, why should we defend ourselves against the armies of the Nephilim? If our training methods are based upon dehumanizing the enemy, aren't we just playing into his hand? If it's true that we live forever and that the taste of death is as sweet as this spoonful of creme brulee, why don't we just wait for them to come and do their worst?" asked Riker. Lorraine looked at him with her soft, blue eyes and smiled. She didn't blink. She moved her face forward slowly and locked her eyes with his. "The true purpose of war is to capture the human soul." Both men, charging across the frozen tundra with their battle axes, lose the moment they begin running, she said. "My God," said Riker, feeling the water well up in his own eyes. "I have no idea how to protect. The forces of Semyaza cannot take this planet. They cannot even exist in this vibration. If they bomb us from orbit, they will accomplish nothing, she said. That's just it. Innocent people running everywhere in terror, screaming. Why didn't you do anything to save us? Or they'll stand here on the ground shooting arrows helplessly at the clouds and curse God. They will destroy city after city until they run out of bombs, he said, closing his eyes and letting the tears flow down his cheeks. Then we have to stop them before they get here, she said. Stop who before they get here? Asked Kyle as he came through the doorway of the kitchen with Donna, with Dick and Katie right behind them. Oh, hey, guys, what brings you out almost at midnight? Asked Lorraine. You kidding? Midnight chow, said Dick. More like midnight dessert. What does the good chef have tonight? Asked Katie. Hey, I was invited, said Kyle, shaking Lorraine's hand. Thank you for coming, Kyle, said Lorraine. Ah, my beautiful young people. I have a treat for you. Creme brulee and a coffee sound good? Yes, asked the chef. That sounds divine, said Donna. The chef fired up his burner and painted the sugar a golden brown on four more dishes of his homemade dessert. He flipped the saucers onto the table with white cups and began pouring the coffee as the four sat down around the small white table with the president and Lorraine wiping their eyes. What's up, Bob? Asked Dick, sitting next to Riker and extending his hand to shake his. Riker shook his hand and smiled into Dick's unpatched eye. I don't think I've ever met a more honest man than you, said Riker. Me? Well, I actually twisted the story a few times to my benefit, said Dick, sweeping his hair back off his forehead. I mean, you are what you are, pedal to the metal. You're not trying to be something you're not, said Riker. Dick paused for a moment, trying not to be too quick on his response. The way I look at it, we're in this together. We need a leader, and you've been elected to do the job. Maybe because you were the last man to step backward when they called for volunteers, but you got the job, said Dick, looking Riker in the eye. You're right. It's just that sometimes there doesn't seem to be an answer, said Riker, looking down at his coffee and taking a sip to occupy his mouth. What answer? What's the question? I love questions, said Kyle, licking his spoon. I have a feeling. May I? Asked Lorraine to Riker, looking under his downward gaze to reach his eyes. Riker waved the back of his hand to her in permission. When the two planets come apart, we estimate the higher Earth will take some months to drift into space toward some kind of wormhole, a space river of some kind. At least that's what the ancients call it. Well, the bad guys are expected to attack us as long as they can. If we marshal an army to fight them, we will lose the souls of the people doing the fighting. It's the other casualty in war. How do we stop them without fighting on the ground or using humans as soldiers? Well, that's easy enough, said Kyle. Riker looked up from his half-eaten dessert and put his coffee cup down. I'm sure you don't understand the question, said Riker. I wouldn't be so hasty, said Dick, motioning to Kyle to explain the full answer. Donna put her arm around Kyle's shoulder. His lip was quivering. His mind was racing far ahead of his ability to speak. Easy, Kyle. Slow down your mind. Breathe, said Donna. He's been working on the generator almost nonstop. Give him a second. I got it, said Kyle, taking a few deep breaths and swallowing another sip of coffee. The answer is on the moon, he said finally. The moon? Asked Dick. Yeah, the moon, said Kyle, with his eyes darting back and forth between Lorraine and Riker. May I? Asked Lorraine, holding her hands out across the table to accept Kyle's. Kyle slowly extended his hands across the corner of the table and put them into her upward-facing palms. Close your eyes. Take a few long breaths through your nose and relax, okay? Just let me hold your hands for a moment. The rest of you just relax and enjoy the great dessert. Lorraine kept her eyes open and looked at Kyle's face as he breathed with his eyes closed. She could feel the almost imperceptible convulsions in his hands. She let the force of his ability into her, and her mind began to slip. She regained her balance and stayed focused on his face as the lines began to disappear and his eyelids stopped quivering. "That's good. Feel more peaceful now?" "Yeah," he said with a long exhale, and he opened his eyes. "How do you do that?" asked Kyle, slowly withdrawing his hands from her open palms. "Do what?" she asked. "How do you shift like that? I mean, it's rough in there. You keep your feet," he said very quietly. "I'm a traveler," she said. "I'm not so much. I mean, I sort of fall from place to place, and I've learned to keep my eyes open, but I saw you see the stepping stones," he said. Lorraine looked at Donna for a brief second and winked at her. "Let's talk about the moon for a second," she said. "The moon? Oh, yeah, the moon. You said the planets will come apart and start drifting. I assume that the moon isn't in on this gig, so it stays behind, just like it was here when this Earth got here like a bazillion years ago. Well, that means that its normally equatorial orbit around Earth will be pulled to a Lagrange point between the planets, sort of like an atom, only bigger. You know, like a hydrogen proton between two oxygen atoms," he said, putting a cup between two saucers about a foot apart. "So that will create a blind spot on our side of the moon," said Kyle, putting his finger against the side of the cup closest to him. "So we have to go back to the moon to fight them?" asked Riker. "Well, not now," said Kyle. "What are you saying, buddy?" said Dick. "I don't know how to explain it. Sometimes when I'm in the lab, time doesn't work right," said Kyle, rubbing his hands together. "You always did get lost in your work," said Dick. "No," said Donna, "that's not what he means. He means that time slips back and forth for him. It's harder than you know." "You mean like time travel?" asked Katie. "No, it's more like time sight," said Kyle. "The stepping stones." "Yeah, but it's cool, but it's scary," said Kyle. "Far out," said Dick. "Anyway, you can't go now, because the moon has to move first. Then you go," said Kyle, skipping one hand off the palm of the other. "I want to come and see you tomorrow," said Lorraine. "That's cool," said Kyle. "Rhino's working with him in the lab," said Donna. "Yeah, how's your energy thing coming anyway?" asked Riker. "The structure worked okay. It made power. But something's still missing," said Kyle. "You'll get it," said Riker. "Oh, we got the same frequency peaks, but we had to spin the rotor to make any power. By the time the power's considered to run the lathe, it's probably not making any new power," said Kyle. "That's a start, though, right?" asked Riker. "Not really. We've been making electricity that way for over 100 years. We have a few options left." "I'm not giving up yet," said Kyle. "Well, the report I got back from the chief said you showed him something new," said Riker. "When has the military ever seen anything new?" asked Dick. "Point well taken," said Riker. "Give me a few days. I'll show you something," said Kyle. "Can't you give me a clue?" asked Riker. No can do, Mr. President," said Dick. "We'll let you know when race day arrives." "Race day?" asked Riker. "It's when the cars reach the staging lights," said Katie. "I can't wait to see what you two bring us," said Lorraine, smiling so large her blue eyes disappeared. "Who, us?" asked Dick, pointing to Kyle. "No," said Lorraine, pointing to Katie. Katie blushed and lowered her head, and Dick reached over and held her hand. The room was quiet for a moment while everyone took a sip of their coffee and played with their spoons and the remaining film of sweetness left in the small dishes. Lorraine reached over and put her hand on top of theirs. She smiled at both of them. "He's going to be amazing," she said. I can feel him in there, said Katie, rubbing her free hand across her belly. Well, it's after midnight, and I have a day of days tomorrow, said Riker. Yeah, we got to get going too, said Dick. I'll come by the lab before lunch tomorrow, said Lorraine with a question on her voice. That'll work, said Kyle, standing up with Donna and taking her hand. They headed for the door, and Katie slipped her arm around his shoulders. Mr. President, I'll see you first thing before the JC meeting, asked Lorraine. I'm already there, said Riker, shaking her hand and giving a head nod to Hadid that they were leaving. Hadid was on his heels as he walked into the hallway and headed for the elevator. Did you get some of that dessert? Yes, sir. The coffee was very good, said Hadid. What is your take on the moon thing? Asked Riker. There is something you probably should see. It's time, said Hadid. Lorraine, are you heading home? Can we walk you? Asked Riker. I'll go with you. I need a walk after that calorie rush, she said, smiling. Okay, let's go, said Riker. We need to do this again very soon, she said to Chef Bailey. My dear, I will always be here with something good to eat. See you in the morning, said Chef Bailey. I'll have to start exercising again if I keep meeting like this, but I would be delighted, said Riker, touching his forehead to say goodbye to the chef and walking out the doors. Another ancient writing? Asked Riker. We're not sure, said Hadid. There you go again, being mystic, said Riker. I mean, no one remembers this being there before. It appears in the ancient writings, but there's no memory of it among my people, said Hadid as they neared the elevator. He motioned to Riker not to continue to ask questions until they were alone again. First floor? Asked Dick. Yeah, I have a limo waiting, said Riker, smiling and putting his hand on Dick's shoulder. I've got your limo in the motor pool, said Dick. I've heard nothing but bad things about that purple car of yours, said Riker. It's as bad a car as there ever was, said Dick, turning toward him. Someday, when we get out of here, maybe, said Riker. You know what they say about some days, said Dick. I'll see you again soon, said Riker as the elevator doors opened and they walked out into the empty lobby. You bet, said Dick as he shook his hand. The four of them turned to walk toward Building A with their heads close together in quiet conversation. Okay, what do you mean it appears in the text? You mean it's changed? Asked Riker, barely able to contain himself. Humans have a way of observing time, unlike any other being in the universe except, well, God, said Hadid. You mean our imagination, said Riker flatly. I mean our gaze, our ability not just to see, but to really look at something, said Hadid. What's the difference? Said Riker, frustrated with Hadid's tiny steps. Humans emit an energy, a frequency, that has measurable energy, some more than others, much more. But when there are many of such beings looking at something, it is affected by that look, said Lorraine, pointing into her own palm. There are laws and rules that apply to adding energy to the environment, said Lorraine. There are some who have developed this skill to a very high level. They change things, said Hadid with a touch of fear in his voice. You mean the future? They can manifest things in the future. That's what she says, said Riker. And the past, said Hadid distantly. The past? How can you change the past? It's already happened. There are time paradoxes. It hurts my head to think about it sometimes, said Riker. That's what I'm trying not to, well, to say. Humans know when something in the past has changed. They can compare their own memory with the facts they see. If they don't match, then something has changed, said Hadid. Most people just overlook it. They think they remembered it wrong, and they just keep going, said Lorraine. You're sure you're not just being forgetful? Asked Riker. You know what an RNG is? A random number generator? Asked Lorraine as they slowed their walk to extend the discussion on the yellow-lit road across the front of the five buildings under Raven Rock Mountain. I suppose it's a computer, right? Asked Riker. Yes. It picks numbers between 1 and 100 at a rate of about 1 per second. Probability says that every number has an equal chance of being picked and added to the list. The process continues for a day or so. Lots of numbers. But here's what we know. There is a nearly 50% chance that the numbers will be odd and even. A graph of the numbers should look like a box. Random variations from day to day are normal and within a certain probability range, asked Lorraine. Sounds like a boring job, said Riker. It is, until someone is asked to alter the outcome by thinking about it, said Hadid. You mean standing there all day looking at the machine like a crap table and picking numbers, asked Riker. Much stranger than that. You see, there are thousands of envelopes with printouts of the numbers generated by date. They sit in a vault under a university math building. There are beings who can change the numbers on the printouts that were printed 40 years ago, said Lorraine. Riker stopped walking. He turned to face the sheer granite wall more than 300 feet up into the darkness above the lights on the other side of the street. How much of a change? Asked Riker. Purposeful shifts in things like odd or even numbers above 50 or below 50. Billions to one in probability of coincidence, said Lorraine. So you're saying the timelines can be shifted by these beings? Asked Riker. Or teams of beings with that talent, said Hadid. Christ, you mean there really are superheroes? Asked Riker facetiously. Or supervillains, said Lorraine. We have known about them throughout time. That's the main reason why our sect has nothing in writing. Every lesson is passed on by word of mouth in a certain place, said Hadid. I've heard about these oral traditions, like temple rites, priesthoods. I've tried to learn more, but there are no records, no teachers, said Lorraine. Not for women, said Hadid quietly. No wonder you guys are lost so much of the time, said Riker. I didn't make the rules, said Hadid. Yeah, rules are made by men, said Lorraine coldly. Listen, I know it's late, but I need to see these writings. I need to see them now, said Riker, facing Hadid. Yes, Mr. President, said Hadid, slightly bowing his head. And a new rule. She is included in your lessons, said Riker, pointing his finger. The three of them walked with purpose now, mentally looking over their shoulders. The street was empty, and they could hear their footsteps echoing off the granite wall on the other side. They arrived at Building B and walked through the empty lobby into the elevators. It was strange being in this place. Normally it was busy with people. They always tried to tune out the fact that they were hundreds of feet underground. But they were aware of it now. It felt like a basement, no matter how many floors they might ascend. The elevator doors shut quietly, and Hadid took out his magnetic card and held it against a small recessed portion of the panel. The lights in the elevator turned red, and they began to descend. Down? I didn't think there was a down, said Lorraine. Secrets within secrets, said Riker, looking at the floor indicator as it went blank. They dropped for what seemed like a minute, and then suddenly the elevator lurched to a stop. The doors opened to blackness and stayed open as Hadid pressed the emergency stop button. He held his cell phone up and turned the flashlight on. Ahead in the pitch blackness was a flat green steel door. He placed his magnetic card against it, and a small panel slid open, revealing a shiny metal square. Mr. President, I need your palm, said Hadid. Riker stepped forward, holding Lorraine's chilly hand in his left, while he placed his right palm flat under the metal panel. The door began to vibrate like gears were working behind it. He removed his hand. The panel slid shut, and the door began to open. The air coming out smelled sterile and dry. Hadid reached inside the door and flipped the switch, and they each squinted as the daylight evaporated the darkness. "I assume this is the new vault," said Riker. "Actually, it's the oldest vault, built in 1946. The air is dedicated, and there's enough food and water down here for 50 people for a year, perhaps more with rationing. The Secret Service added a tunnel with an escape pod in case of an emergency," said Hadid, walking to the rear of the tiny complex and turning on another light. "The lights are just like sunlight, same wavelengths. It can grow plants and produce vitamin D in humans." "Feels like a tomb," said Lorraine. "That's because there's no human presence here," said Hadid. "Has anyone ever died in here?" she asked. "Not that I know of. The Cold War has come and gone a couple of times. This was always an option, in case cooler heads went crazy," said Hadid. "Where does the tunnel go?" asked Riker, looking around. "It comes out in the mountains a few miles away. Even I don't know the exit spot. The builders never recorded it," said Hadid. "Well, let's hope no one went back in the past and left it incomplete," said Riker sarcastically. "This way, Mr. President," said Hadid as he opened a door and began walking down a long hallway. "Holy shit," said Riker. "Talk about your black budgets." "I've seen five-star hotels with less detail," said Lorraine. "Who keeps this place so clean?" "It's triple-filtered air, then dried to a dew point of 40 degrees Fahrenheit. There's no dust, no radiation, no viruses that can get in here. The vents can be shut off, passing all the air through oxygen generators that can last for years, courtesy of NASA," said Hadid. "Where are we going now?" asked Riker. "The library," said Hadid, arriving at the last door and opening it for them to enter. "Holy library card, Batman," said Lorraine. "How many books are in here? Can't you just put them on computer now?" asked Riker. "I think there are more than 100,000 volumes in here. Originals, ancient books taken from crypts all over the world. Not even the Library of Congress has copies of these books," said Hadid. "I guess, with the destruction of Vatican City, this is the only vault of its kind," said Lorraine. "There are others. Other sects," said Hadid, hiding his eyes. "Good guys?" asked Riker. "And very bad ones, as old as the earth itself," said Hadid. "Let's see the book that changed," said Riker. "Yes, Mr. President," said Hadid, walking down one of the aisles to a certain shelf. He picked a large book, walked down to a small table in the center of the aisle with four chairs, and placed it in the center. He opened the book and paged through it to a certain spot. "Here. It changed. In both copies of this book, I checked it myself once our reviewers found it." "Reviewers?" asked Lorraine. "Readers that have memorized the book. They read through it and then start over, looking for changes," said Hadid. "What is their purpose?" asked Lorraine, looking into Hadid's dark eyes now. "Footprints," said Hadid. "Find many of them?" asked Lorraine carefully, feeling into him now. "Not until recently," said Hadid, opening his soul to her fearlessly. "Last-minute changes," said Lorraine, as though she was reading Hadid's mind. "There are many observers now, and there are random events that cannot be foreseen," said Hadid, not blinking, as her blue eyes were irresistible and peaceful. "Let's see the latest adjustment," said Lorraine, blinking first as a way of releasing Hadid from her gaze. Hadid leaned down and put his hand on the parchment pages to translate the handwritten words. "Moreover, thou son of man, if you have ears, listen to my words. At the end of the age, when the archer is high overhead, the woman's time shall be at hand. Worlds I have without number, but the earth have I laid the foundations that it should not be removed forever. But in that day I shall look upon the earth, and it shall tremble, and the wheat shall be divided from the tares, and the garment of the waters with which I adorned the woman shall be withdrawn and taken home to that place where it was before, and the righteous shall be born out of the earth, and there shall be a new heaven and a new earth. This is where the change occurs. The passage tells us something that we have never known before, said Hadid as he continued translating. And the moon shall no more be for the seasons, and the sun shall know its going down. The north star shall be lost to the mother, and unto the new child shall I give an inheritance in the high places of the earth, for the low places shall return to the deep from which it came. There's your moon, said Hadid, pointing to the verse in the book. Is this what Kyle was saying? Asked Riker. I think it is, said Hadid. The moon is going to be pulled out of its orbit. It's going to be placed at the north pole of the lower earth. I guess it's called the mother, and at the south pole of the higher earth. The new earth is the child, right? Asked Lorraine. So it is written, said Hadid, standing up straight and looking at them both. We're in the high places, aren't we? Asked Riker. What time is it? Asked Lorraine. Oh, geez, it's nearly 3 o'clock. Thank you, Hadid. Let's get home and get some sleep. We have meetings in 5 hours, said Riker. Yes, Mr. President, said Hadid, gently closing the old book and sliding it back onto the bookshelf in its proper place. The three of them turned off the lights as they walked toward the elevator and sealed the vault door. Hadid pulled the emergency stop button, and the door slid quietly shut. How far down are we? Asked Riker. I'm not sure, Mr. President, said Hadid without comment. I'm having breakfast with Shelley at 7. Should I share any of this? Asked Lorraine. I think we need to begin moving people, but I want to keep conflict to a minimum. Make sure the freeways are kept moving. Use air patrols if needed to keep stalled cars and accidents cleared. I'm not sure what is considered the high places, but I'm going to guess that we're talking about at least 2,000 feet. And make sure those coasts are evacuated, said Riker as the doors opened on the ground floor. I'll see you in the morning, said Lorraine. Hadid, make sure she gets home all right, said Riker. I'm okay. I'll take a vehicle and drive down to Building C, she said. You sure? I know we're safe down here, but I don't trust many people these days, said Riker. Go, get some sleep. I'll see you at 8, or maybe 5 after, she said, smiling as she swung one of the glass doors outward from the lobby and headed for an olive-green golf cart plugged in by the curb. She'll be okay, won't she, Hadid? Asked Riker at the point of exhaustion. She opens me like a clam in the desert. She will be fine, said Hadid. The two men let the elevator door close as they headed for the presidential residence on the top floor of Building E, deep beneath Raven Rock Mountain.